Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 119.
This week on the podcast, kidnapping is this year's weapons of mass destruction.
The U.S. government charters Ebola's first flight to Atlanta.
One day after his Obama lawsuit vote, Boehner pleads with the president for unilateral action on immigration.
Turns out some guys were doing some torture or something like that. Just carry on with your day.
Fearing a cookie-inspired uprising, Kim Jong-un bans a much-beloved capitalist cookie.
And Sarah Palin's channel already providing a platform for horribly bigoted real Americans to call for Obama's death. Ain't America great?
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com. So do that.
You should.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we've got a bit of a deja vu open to our podcast here, it seems
Lordy
like.
Lordy Lord.
Right?
That was sort of adorable of me to say Lordy Lord. Never said that before in my life. But I felt that driven to exasperation.
I know.
We're about to again announce to you that a ceasefire ended unceremoniously in the Middle East just seconds after it had been put into effect,
yeah,
basically.
3 hours.
Two hours.
They had a 3-day ceasefire that
planned.
Instead of lasting 3 days, lasted 3 hours.
2 hours.
Two. Okay. All right.
Not even three.
I was giving them the benefit of the doubt, but we shouldn't do that.
We shouldn't do that. No one is doing it right. So.
No.
The ceasefire is always being violated much quicker than you expect it to be.
Yeah. So they announced it on Friday.
Right. They announced it on Friday.
Ban Ki-moon, John Kerry.
All the big muckety mucks.
Right.
Real into the ceasefire plan that they had. This is John Kerry's new strategy there, is to sort of like try to get them with little ceasefires until they're like, you know what? This is nice having a ceasefire.
Well, the thing about it is that they keep calling them humanitarian ceasefires. Like, and I think it's just so they can sort of like go in and like deal with like some issues and like make sure that like, you know, because civilians
are
dying.
17,000
like
civilians or 1,700 civilians dying.
But like if you're just stopping for 3 days to then at a certain point
start
resume
again.
Blowing everybody up, like maybe.
Well, I think.
Maybe I don't care about the ceasefire potentially. I'm not sure.
I think that the issue is that. You know, I don't think that Israel really wants to talk anymore about this.
They don't.
And so they're sort of like, this ceasefire is sort of, the intention would be that it would give every side a chance to talk without also managing these competing interests and having new things constantly spring up.
Well,
they're not interested in talking.
They're not interested because they claim that they have already accepted enough ceasefires. And the Palestinian Authority is now sort of like starting to work with Hamas a little more than they had been, and finally were ready to send a delegation to go speak with Egypt, which they hadn't been doing. As we said, they have all of their ceasefire plans have been coming through like Qatar and like some
other,
of those countries, and all of Israel's had been coming through Egypt, like,
and it's
with
like
America,
there's too many
everything.
Competing interests already, just having to talk who you talk
and
to
so
about a
finally,
ceasefire.
Finally, the Palestinian Authority decided that they'd send a delegation to Egypt, and Israel didn't send one.
Yeah. Oh, right, yeah. No,
it's... So, it's like, Israel is just sort of like,
gone rogue.
Whatever.
They've gone rogue.
Because the other thing that ended the
ceasefire... Here's another deja vu.
Right, another deja vu, because as we discussed last week, the reason that this whole new conflict supposedly started was because those three Israelis were kidnapped by Hamas, which we have since found out they were not kidnapped by Hamas.
Right, they were kidnapped by a random offshoot group that was acting under their own orders.
This is turning into the new weapons of mass destruction reasoning to go to war, basically, because they're still going with this. I was at a, I went with one of my friends yesterday to this solidarity with Israel talk, and there was a lot of talk about like the kidnapping of these three teenagers by Hamas.
As if it was a fact,
which we know for sure that it was not. So we have another kidnapping mishap here, because supposedly the reason that the ceasefire ended was because they reported that an Israeli soldier had been kidnapped. Except he hadn't been kidnapped. He had just been killed in battle.
He
was missing for a while because
he had been in a tunnel.
Right. He had been in a tunnel because he was with a group of Israeli soldiers who were trying to, you know, destroy the tunnel. And apparently one of the Hamas fighters came over and was wearing like a suicide, you know, he was a suicide bomber. He was wearing like a suicide vest or whatever, and killed like two people like who were in his unit. Ultimately, it was three because they killed the supposedly
the man,
kidnapped
the
person.
The man died
as well.
In combat, is what we're saying.
Right, he died in combat.
As all soldiers in a war.
Right, so they couldn't find his body initially, but they found, like, some of his things and weapons and stuff, like, going into the tunnel and stuff. So, like, the initial thought was that they had just, like, absconded with him, but that's not what happened at all.
They just hadn't found the body yet.
They just killed him.
Yeah.
Which is bad, obviously. Like, that was also ending a ceasefire on some level, too. But, like, they got all sort of up in arms
The kidnapping thing has really been the sort of argument that has gotten everyone all worked up.
Right. People are responding well to that.
Yeah. Too well.
Too well.
But so, yeah. So this is now the second time that there has been a fake kidnapping. Or the first kidnapping was real. It just wasn't done by Hamas.
Right.
Which is who ended up paying the price for the kidnapping.
Right.
Also, thousands of innocent civilians.
Right.
This kidnapping didn't even happen.
Right.
And we're still, the ceasefire ended 2 hours later and we're back to it.
So they were back to fighting, and then, like, over the weekend they killed, like, 100 more people or something. It's up to, like you mentioned earlier, over 1,700.
Yeah. And so that means 100 people died over this lie, by the way. Over this kidnapping lie.
Yeah, we would have been in a, we would still be in the ceasefire.
Right.
Right now.
This ceasefire would still be going on at this exact moment.
Right.
So that's so lovely.
Although Israel is now bringing a lot of their soldiers that had gone in on the ground back. They're saying that they're redeploying them, so I don't really know what that means.
Yeah.
It's like, where are they going if they're
Well, they are not showing signs of wanting to stop the conflict. So
they're not sending them on vacation.
They're
not sending them on vacation. They have claimed, though, that they have now properly dealt with this tunnel situation, which is why they're bringing...
That's what the ground troops were about.
Right. So I guess that's sort of good. I mean, if there's... But, I mean, like... I'm trying to silver linings it here.
This is not worth silver lining, because the thing, you know, with them on the ground, they were sort of, like, having to confront the sort of war element of this personally. With them not on the ground, Israel has had very few deaths because of these missiles coming from Hamas. Meanwhile, they've had 1,700.
Yeah.
It is very easy when you're just shooting rockets at someone that are more powerful than their rockets to not care so much about what's going on. Because you're not really... There's no threat to you. You have this fancy missile defense system.
Yeah.
You have, you know, you're way more weighed down with unnecessary explosives than they are. So you have plenty to give to... Plenty to explode over. Like, it's just sort of... You know, the one thing that... having them go in on the ground did do was sort of force, I think, Israelis to face what some of the consequences of war are. Not that I would want Israeli soldiers dying either on the ground.
No, of course
but
not.
I certainly don't want 1,700 civilians dying on the ground.
Right.
And that's something that no one was having to think about when only one Israeli person had died in this entire conflict, and we were still in the hundreds.
Well, and there are a lot of there are a lot of people who think that Hamas's plan was to draw them in on the ground anyway, because that is sort of their best chance to actually kill any of them.
Like,
I don't know.
It's sort of like,
who knows, but
dumb,
I mean,
to even be caring what Hamas's plans were. Like, everyone keeps blaming Hamas's plans for drawing Israel into these things, and it's sort of like one of them is displaying massive military might to a much higher degree than the other. Obviously, we don't want to be playing into Hamas's hands,
right.
But it's not our fault if we followed them into a rabbit hole. I mean, it's not their fault if we followed them into a rabbit hole. Like, they, like, we shouldn't be that manipulative.
Well, right, and I just think that it's so interesting.
Or manipulated.
Yeah.
I'm not manipulative.
Right.
Don't even know the right word.
What is interesting to me is that I think it's curious that they keep coming up with these reasons to go into there. Because what I learned, and I mean, there has been sort of some talk about this in the news, but one of the things that I learned at this, you know, Solidarity for Israel thing yesterday, they had a speaker who was actually quite good and sort of like gave, you know, the history of the conflict, at least as of recently. Some of it, like I said, he mentioned the kidnapped teenagers. So, like, you know, you sort of had
some
to
of it less truthful
sort of,
than other
you
parts
sort of had
it.
To pick out the pieces that were, but he was good. And he talked about sort of like the strategy that Israel has. And they, you know, since 2000, whenever they've had three conflicts, like conflicts in the last, you know, 6 years or whatever. And that's their plan. So on some level, they don't need to declare that it's because three people
no,
were
they're
kidnapped.
Planning, they have the intention of going into
because the intention is to go over there and, what is it, mow the grass or trim the grass or whatever the term is. Like,
whatever a really offensive term is for basically, like, a borderline genocide.
For borderline genocide. Yeah. Like, they are just, they feel like the best way for them to deal with the conflict is to go over there every few years and just
kill everyone.
Weed out a bunch of, you know, Hamas.
Yeah.
And you know, obviously
that strategy lays the groundwork for more Hamas to exist every time. By the way, well, it doesn't allow Hamas to go away. Well,
that's the thing that I feel
it's
like
a terrible strategy.
Well, and the reason why I think that so many Americans are sort of like starting to feel like that's not a great strategy is because, I mean, it's not one.
It's inhumane and horrifying.
But we have also, I think, just within the last sort of 10 years, learned a similar lesson because we are also in the process of fighting terrorists right now. And I think that what we have learned is that by, you know, destroying terrorists, you end up creating more terrorists. And that's, Hamas is a terror group. Well, and I understand why Israel feels like they need to go over there and kill some of them because they're afraid that they're going to kill them. I mean, like, we, you know, it's a similar fear that we have with Al-Qaeda, but it's a different fear because it's like, you know, people who are in the small area, it's mostly civilians, and it's like, well, you said, I mean, it's borderline genocide.
It's borderline genocide, and we many times have heard people make the mistake of calling Palestinians in Gaza, like, Hamas children, or Hamas, you know, women, or Hamas, like, we sort of act like, because Hamas has been the closest thing to a government that they've had, that everyone there is somehow, like, part of Hamas, and it doesn't mean the same thing as it means to be part of Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda is not is not providing services to anyone. They're just a terrorist group, and they exist in multiple states, and they're not governing anything.
Right.
Like, we have to make that distinction at some point, because no one else is stepping up to govern over there.
We do. I think...
And it's not good to be firing rockets, but my dad actually made a good point when he was talking about this with a friend of his, and he was like, you know, his friend was... You know, it's a bunch of old Jewish guys in New York. His friend was going on about how terrible it is that Hamas is doing whatever and Palestinians are terrible, whatnot. And my dad was like, they were talking about the tunnels. And my dad was like, who makes tunnels? And they were like, I don't know. And he was like, prisoners build tunnels. That's who builds tunnels. Like, the fact that things like that even exist are not a sign that Hamas is more evil than anyone else. It's a sign that things are pretty fucking desperate. And that we have to, you know, you have to sort of be willing to talk about this like Hamas is also the government over there. And not necessarily like everyone there is a terrorist. Which we are failing to make that distinction a lot of the time.
Not everyone in Gaza is a terrorist, certainly. But I do think...
I do think that we
would be remiss to not mention the fact that if Hamas had the power to do so, they would kill all the Jews in Israel.
Sure, but I don't... There's not a world in which they have the power to do so. That's the kind of claim, actually, that I feel like ends up doing more damage to Israel's cause
than not. I know, but it is true. I mean, that's sort of claims, the Hamas charter is to kill all the Jews.
Hamas. There's plenty of wackos who have crazy charters. All, you know, this we're talking about this in sort of like the context of like real world people in a real world political situation.
Right.
It is all well and good for Hamas to say that. There was an article in an Israeli paper this week saying that genocide can be justified sometimes.
Yeah.
In an Israeli paper.
Right.
That's a country full of Jews.
They had to take
people.
It down because of the backlash.
They had to take it down because of the backlash. But I mean, we're talking about people who are also grappling with the idea of genocide on their side too. So we're not just talking about Hamas being the only people that are bigoted.
Yeah.
People are extremely bigoted towards Palestinians in Israel. That anytime anyone tells you that in Israel, Palestinian, there's 20% of the population is Palestinian and we're an accepting country, like, they're not. Palestinians don't get the same treatment and the same rights, and they're heavily stigmatized there. Like, it is not like an open country where anyone can just come and exist.
Yeah.
So, like, that is not happening there. But you just sort of, like, you can't, if you're going to accept, if we have a rogue terrorist group fighting a state, like, we can't pretend like the rogue terrorist group is somehow like equivalent in terms of like their, you know, their sort of diplomatic needs to the state. We just can't pretend that, and we also can't pretend like it is ever justified in fighting a terrorist group to kill tons of people who are sort of victims of both sides. I mean, Israel has a history also of going in and causing civil wars in other countries. I mean, Lebanon had a 10-year civil war that was basically started by Israel. And it was because Hezbollah was firing rockets into Israel.
Yeah.
And so they responded in a way that caused a civil war where tons of, you know, Lebanese ended up killing each other, basically.
Yeah.
But like that, the sort of claims of anti-Semitism, I think, are starting to get to me just because they're being used to justify such an atrocious act True. That I can't even, like, it just, like, makes my blood boil to hear, you know, anti-Semitism get bandied around that way. And it makes Jews seem like monsters if that's an argument that they're willing to make in order to justify essentially trying to commit another genocide. Because one thing that you did say about this thing you went to is they were very open about their strategy to just sort of, like,
well, that's what I
kill
thought.
Whoever.
That was, like, my big sort of, like, interesting takeaway from this was that,
yeah.
you know, sort of. But, I mean, you know, Netanyahu has been sort of, like, open about this too, and they're not necessarily trying to hide it. I feel like not enough people are probably talking about it, but, like, this is what they're up to. I mean, they're not attempting to say otherwise.
No, like, they're not trying to be sorry about it
when asked point blank.
Yeah,
I mean, so, but anyway.
Anyway,
on to Russia.
On to Russia, where things are.
They're not up to anything
terrible, but less contentious between us, at least.
Right, exactly. Yes. So. We had been sort of talking about, you know, big sanctions coming up, and earlier in the week, we really sort of, like, put the hammer down big time, and the EU actually, I think, later in the week just finally passed, a bill, too, that they are now on board with this, because they had been sort of, like,
wishy-washy.
The wishy-washy, and they are also the people who can, like, really sort of deal with this. Like, they can deal with sort of, like, Russian
but
banks
also,
heavily, they get their energy from
they're
them.
They're the people who get their energy from Russia, so they were not trying to... I mean, they had sort of more at stake than we did, I think, which is why they were being so wishy-washy initially, is because they were like, can we not get involved in this somehow? Is there a way for us to not be involved?
Yeah.
There's not.
No, there's really not. They're also sanctioning Russian arms companies.
Kalashnikov. I was wondering if this might be able to somehow diminish the number of random shootings we have going on domestically. Fewer AK-47s for everyone.
Yeah,
let's hope.
Seriously.
Who knows? The financial services sector, the energy sector... arms and related materials sectors. I think it's two key Russian banks, two big banks there, two big energy firms there, and then a bunch of sanctions on eight firearms manufacturers, like you said, including Kalashnikov.
Yeah. Supposedly these are going to be, I mean,
bad
for Russia. Supposedly their economy is already sort of like in a tailspin and, like, has no growth just from sort of, like, the most recent round of sanctions. And these are worse.
I would trust Russia to not care that much about
this. Well, I mean, everybody is supportive of what's going on over there. Like, I think all of the polls are sort of, like, very pro-Putin over there.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think that, like... I mean, everybody sort of loves his boldness
on this
situation.
This would appeal
to
Russians.
Right? I mean, it's not as if... I think it'll probably take a while to catch up once they realize sort of, like, how... bad things may ultimately get if these, you know, sanctions continue and actually start to further work. But right now, he doesn't really have a reason to stop.
This is always the dice that you roll anyway when you take sanctions or any, you know, have a military action or anything else that's sort of aggressive, is that you have to worry that people will rally around their leader instead of blame them for the sanctions.
Right, exactly.
And that is what happens. That has happened to us several times militarily, unexpectedly, and that's why we're always losing random wars that we're getting ourselves involved in. But that also happens on the sanctions end.
Yeah.
So
I think that was on Monday. Yeah, and that wasn't a great day for U.S.-Russian relations Monday, because that was when these sanctions were announced, and we also announced that day that Russia violated, like, a Cold War treaty that was signed under the Reagan administration.
Yeah.
Because they're, like, testing long-range missiles or something like that, and they're not supposed to be doing that.
They're just, like, not trying to care right now.
They don't care at all.
They don't care.
Nope.
They're pissed off because China didn't sign that treaty, so China can test long-range missiles.
Well, right. They're sort of like, why do we not get to do this when everybody else is doing it?
Well, because they've proven themselves to be crazier than China.
Well, exactly.
That's why. It's
But we are
clear
not
to
really
see.
Going to do anything about it.
Other no, than we just
sort of, like, draw
are going
to
make snarky
to
remarks about it, basically.
Right. And we've sort of known that they've been doing it for a while. Like, they've been testing these missiles, I think, like, since 2007 or something like that. Like, but they... I mean, what are we going to, like, we're going to start bombing them because they did this? Like, I think under the treaty, we are given, like, the option to deal with them militarily, like, if they don't stick with the treaty. But we're, like, obviously not going to. I think this is just more sort of, like, a talking point that they're, like, being shitty than it is anything else.
Yeah, it's a talking point.
Yeah.
Just so that we can be, like, Russia's being shitty to ourselves and then feel good about how we all identify that Russia is shitty.
Right. Exactly.
Meanwhile, everyone's going to dive a bullet anyway, so it doesn't matter what happens.
Your childhood fears are like...
I couldn't have imagined that they would come true in this way. So we have there were two American victims that got diagnosed with Ebola last week, and this week one of them came to the U.S. for treatment.
Right.
Good luck, Atlanta.
Just got here.
There was a very complicated, like, you know, military grade plane operation to get them over here. I looked at the pictures of the plane and I was like, this doesn't look as safe as I would want it to. They also though had like this weird bubble that they were transporting them in.
Yeah.
Which I was like worried about too.
Well, it's interesting because I saw an interview with like the head of the CDC and then also somebody from like the Cleveland Clinic who like specializes like in infectious diseases and stuff. And they were like both like, all of the necessary precautions were taken. And it's sort of like, well, do you remember last week we were talking about like how the doctors who were infected
had taken all the necessary precautions,
had like followed like all of the CDC.
Famous Ebola doctors were slayed by this disease.
Yeah, exactly. So that's not great. Although it is supposedly pretty hard to contract, and especially like I think that he is going to be in quarantine, and so I mean it's not just like he's gonna be like walking the halls of the hospital like getting his exercise
for his pudding or whatever.
Right, exactly. So, and also, you know, people seem to think that certainly you don't want to get Ebola. That's not great. Like, that's not a thing that people are looking for.
No.
In healthy people, the death rate is a lot lower, and if you can sort of treat specifically, like, we know what it does to the body. So if you can sort of, like, you know, lift up the things that we know that Ebola is going to attack,
right,
like it attacks, you know, your liver at some point. Right. So you sort of, like, treat, you know, like, liver functions, and you do some things like that. Like, the incubation period is between 8 and 21 days. Everybody seems to think that he's actually going to end up being fine. He walked into the hospital by himself.
Which worries me, because...
I mean, he was in, like, a giant, you know, freaking spacesuit, basically.
Yeah, one tear in that spacesuit, we all die of Ebola.
Right.
The Onion had a great headline, which was, Ebola vaccine is 50 white people away. Which, we talked about this last week, how tropical and, you know, developing nations' infectious diseases are never really treated, or we never really do any research on them,
right,
because white people aren't dying of them, and the big money draws in research are things white people die of. That's why cancer is a big one, because that can slay anyone. You know, anyone can get cancer because it comes from the inside out, you don't have to be around
poor
people to get cancer.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
So, in any case, so when 48 more white people contract Ebola, we'll certainly be on the way to getting a cure together.
Oh boy.
But there's a big summit this week that's happening that a couple of African leaders are going to have to skip because of this Ebola crisis.
It's like the African America like relations
summit
or something.
Like Liberia can't go, Sierra Leone can't go.
Right.
Like Liberia, the nation that we founded in Africa, can't come to our summit.
Oh,
disaster.
Man. Yeah.
Liberia is a real colonial mess.
Is it? I don't know anything.
We created Liberia. We were planning to send the slaves back. When slavery ended, we had vague plans to rid ourselves of black people by sending them back to Africa, which is horrible and offensive crazy, and surprisingly didn't work that well. Because you can't just be shipping people to any old part of the world and then being like, see, you're in Africa, you're home.
Yeah.
Like people who had never been to Africa, people who had lived their entire adult lives in the United States,
sure,
sent back to Africa to go found Liberia.
God,
it's not a surprise that Liberia's a 50% mess.
No, it's really not.
Not a surprise at all.
Nope.
Meanwhile,
speaking
of failures.
This is, I feel like, the story of the week, really.
Yeah.
I mean, at least domestically, because this immigration thing did not get fixed. We said last week.
Yeah, it wouldn't happen.
Clairvoyant, once again,
yes,
that nobody was going to do anything about the immigration thing because we knew it couldn't get done in the House and they weren't going to be able to figure it out between the House and the Senate. They couldn't get those spending bills together at all. And oddly enough, the only thing that passed was in the House, but that's only because they ended up with, like, the wing nuttiest of things possible to pass. But on Thursday, Boehner brought a bill to the floor, and they immediately pulled it because they realized that they didn't have the votes for it. And it was harsh. It was going to, like, deport the kids quicker. It was going to add, like, more layers of border security and enforcement. Like, it was nuts.
Yeah.
And it wasn't that expensive either. I think it was like something like 659
or 57
it was million. It was just over 600 million.
It wasn't
we
weren't even at a billion.
It was only enough to like ship some more law enforcement down there and then like make sure the kids got back to Central America.
Right.
Like that was all that they were handling
anywhere
basically.
In Central America.
But it oddly enough, or not oddly enough, just as you might expect,
unsurprisingly,
was not loony enough for the Tea Party.
Right.
So they didn't have enough.
Nothing is.
They didn't have enough votes to get it passed. And the Democrats weren't going to vote on it because it was messing with that 2008 law that we talked about that was, like, going to be able to, like, you know, send all these kids back. So There was no way that that was going to get passed. So Friday, they had to come back. They were supposed to be on vacation already on Friday. They came back with a harsher bill that was, like, going to have all of the things from Thursday's bill, but was, like, also going to undo Obama's Dream Act situation.
Right.
And, like, send all of those kids back to Mexico, basically.
Yeah.
Republicans mysteriously, or Tea Party people who, like, just aren't dealing in facts at all, seem to think that this Dream Act situation that the Obama administration went forward with without Congress has something to do with the influx of children coming from South America. It does not.
As unrelated.
Completely unrelated.
Just, they're just confused because it's all brown people.
Right, exactly. So that passed late Friday night.
Of course. But why not pass a bill that doesn't solve the problem and instead addresses some other concern that you have that's unrelated?
Yeah, so they passed, like, this total non-starter law. Right. Like, going, I mean, nowhere fast. Right. I mean, if the Republicans had the Senate, they wouldn't have even probably voted on this because it was too crazy. Meanwhile, in the Senate, they were trying to pass their own bill over there, but they couldn't even get that to a vote because Ted Cruz and Jeff Sessions, nutty teabaggers, were blocking that. So the Senate didn't pass anything. So everybody just went on vacation.
Yep.
That's
just
it.
Just left. Didn't get anywhere.
There you go.
Not so bothered.
No. And then, after all of that, bless their hearts, they didn't get anything done. John Boehner and the Republicans asked Obama to do it by himself.
Mm-hmm.
After a week, when we're going to get to the story in a little bit, that they voted to sue him for overreach.
Yeah. Yeah.
They just said to do it. Just do it. Just do whatever you can.
Yeah.
You don't need us.
Yeah.
I mean, the balls it takes to do something like that after you've just sued the man for doing the very thing
what you're asking him to do right now.
I mean,
it is a mystery.
The hypocrisy there is really mind-boggling.
It's mind-boggling. It's really obvious. Like, I don't, like,
I mean,
I don't even understand how they, like, were able to come to these decisions as decisions independently without being like, you know what? Hold on.
I know.
It seems like we're either going to have to get rid of this lawsuit thing. By the way, the lawsuit thing was one of the only things that they passed this week. That was, you know,
it's one of the only things that they passed at all.
They had all these, they have highway funding bills and, like, all of these bills they have to pass that are time sensitive that they need to pass before summer vacation.
Yeah.
And instead, they, like, held up Congress for a day on Wednesday to pass this.
Yeah, this resolution.
Dumb resolution to sue Obama. Yeah. It may not surprise you then to find that this is the least effective Congress since last Congress, which was the least effective Congress in history.
Right. At this time in the last Congress, they had passed 153 bills. Right now, this Congress had passed 142 bills. Interestingly enough, when Harry Truman, remember, he ran against the do-nothing Congress, that's ultimately how he got elected president, they passed 900 bills into law.
I mean,
We're at 142 right now.
That's what things are looking like here. That's how things are going.
That's what we're dealing with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's, and it, you know, I think a lot of Democrats have been talking about how this raises their chances in the fall of winning races.
I think it gives them something to at least hang their hats on.
Right.
I mean, you know, it's been the Republicans who have really been complaining about this border situation that sort of, like, you know, Obama and the Democrats have let this happen. This really was sort of their chance to, like, actually say, look, we solved this situation.
Yeah.
And also, immigration has been such a bad issue for them.
Oh,
if they really could have hunkered down and, like, pulled this together, they really probably would have come out looking like some sort of heroes.
There's so many lessons that they have not learned that have been handed to them.
All of them. They haven't learned all of them.
You know, they don't learn this lesson about women. It's like they need women to vote for them. They continue to say horribly offensive things about women and take away women's rights just without even thinking, like, wait a minute. And the same is, like, this is not how you get Latino voters to vote for you. Latino voters are not going to vote for the party that, like, has first demonized, you know, Central Americans, and by extension demonized most, like, countries in Central America that people aren't even coming from, because you know that these Republicans are not, like, when you say Central America, they're not just thinking about Honduras.
No.
They're talking about Mexico, too.
I was going to say, they don't know.
They don't know the difference.
Right.
But so, that, I mean, you just sort of, like, you don't get Latino voters interested in voting for you when this is your position on this.
It's, not at all.
You know, it's when you see that the tide is turning on gay marriage, you don't continue to hunker down on that issue because that doesn't ultimately win the day. Like, you just, like, they've had opportunities.
They really have.
They had socially conservative Latino voters. They had rich gay people. They had stupid women.
Yep.
They had all of the things.
Yep.
Could have gotten all those people to vote for them.
Yep.
Could have, I don't know, gotten greedy black people to vote for them. Not gonna get any of that done.
No.
Not with this plan.
No, not at all. Plan. It was funny because Obama had that press conference on Friday, and we're going to talk about some other things that he said during that. But he was asked about sort of like the failure to get this done, and he sort of just, he was like, I don't really know what to tell you. He goes, it's a difference between the House Republicans and the House Republicans, which
yeah, he's basically exactly like, you'll have to ask them.
And that's the problem with basically everything that doesn't come out of the House, is because like they can't get that.
They can't get their own caucus on board for anything. Together.
Yeah.
Or for anything that's not so loonbaggy that nutty. It's like, yeah, exactly. Not even a legitimate idea. Yeah.
Nancy Pelosi, there's video of this because she did it within view of the cameras. And it's really sort of crazy because Tom Merritt, was like going on and on. He's a Republican, and he was going on and on about how like the Democrats didn't take care of any of this immigration issues when they
had that in 2009 and 2010.
And of course, Nancy Pelosi was the Speaker of the House at the time, and she ran over to the other like this is not part of House decorum at all.
It's not. Like, we're not talking about the Parliament in Britain.
Ran across over to him while he was talking, put up her finger at him. Put her hand up like this, like, and then sort of like that's the end of what you see. But she like chased the man down, like finger wagging at him. Like, it's really devolved over there into like.
I wish that we were doing more of this.
Well, I kind of do too.
I feel like we might get more done if people could just bitch each other out.
I do too.
Like,
screw decorum.
As it is, like the decorum prevents, I think, people from having honest discussions about what's going on because they have to, you know, present everything as if it's all legitimate, as if everyone that's talking nonsense is speaking a legitimate idea.
Yeah.
And, like, that's not what's happening over there.
Yeah.
The Tea Party is being insane. Someone should be able to be like, you know what, you're fucking insane. Like, shut up.
Right.
Like, just don't even, like, someone should make them feel like children because they're acting like children.
I know.
And decorum seems to prevent us.
Right.
Senate is worse.
A finger wag is a good way to make somebody look like they're acting like a child.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah, exactly.
I have a new theory about
the midterms,
the 2016 election, and
everything.
Congressional inaction. Right now.
Yes.
Because we know that nothing is coming out of the House. Like, nothing, for the reasons that we just discussed, because they can't get their caucus together. They have Tea Partiers that aren't voting on anything. They're like the no caucus, basically. Like, they just don't, they don't want to vote on anything. It doesn't matter. Unless it's, like, so crazy that it's, like, a non-starter. So we know that we're not going to win back the House in 2014. It's, like, just not happening.
Right.
We talked about that last week. There's a chance that we could keep the Senate. But I am not convinced that I care whether we keep the Senate, and let me tell you why. We're obviously still going to have the presidency, so we still have veto power.
Right.
And if the House is not giving the Senate anything to vote on, and the Senate is only giving sort of, like, more moderate things for the House to vote on, which they won't vote on, I think that it would be good if the Republicans were the governing party, and we could point to the fact that they weren't getting anything done at all. I think it would secure the presidency. And also, in 2016, there are a lot of people running for Senate who were a part of the Tea Party wave in 2010 that are going to have to defend their seats in Democratic states. Wisconsin, Florida, Iowa, New Hampshire, North Carolina, which is sort of a little purpley, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin. Those are all seats that we could win, especially if it was like turned into another wave election after Republicans had failed to do anything for 2 years. And also, like, the seats that the Democrats have to defend are seats that they're not going to lose under any circumstance. It's like California, Connecticut, Hawaii, Maryland, Vermont, Oregon. Like, we're not going to lose any of those.
Right.
Like, we could win back the Senate in such a way that would be
that we could potentially
we could almost govern
from there.
We could almost govern from there, and you know, maybe win the White House if they bungle it enough in the next 2 years. I'm not obviously like proposing that we like purposely lose the Senate, but
you're not advocating burning down the House.
I'm not gonna go gloom and doom if we do.
All right.
So there you go.
I have only one concern about that.
We talked about this at lunch already.
Yes.
But I mean,
no, my only concern about that, because I am sort of often prone to like allowing the Republicans to make fools of themselves to the degree that they sort of make their own case against them.
Yeah.
It is harder to be the party that's obstructing business than it is to be the party that is trying to do business.
Yeah.
And especially in the Senate, where that's going to be a real focus.
Right.
As it is now, we're able to go pass bills in the Senate and be like, see, we helped. We're on the record having voted for things that seem likely, like they might be useful bills.
Yeah.
And the Republicans are not. Right. And their only position at all has been obstruction.
Right.
And so because of that, they look like assholes over right. there.
But
were in a position to govern, it would, you know, the House is already making the case that Republicans, when they're in a position to govern, don't govern in a sustainable and logical way. That sort of makes that argument. I worry about us having to be the party of obstruction in both houses
right.
because I don't think that will reflect well on our voters.
Right. I agree with you.
I think Republicans like that thing.
Right. You know, I agree with you. I just don't think that we would have to obstruct that much because I think they're doing enough internal destruction
possibly.
That we could just sort of like sit back and watch it all go to hell.
And it might be exciting because it might really give them a chance to go at each other in a way that
like let them
really
have at it. Like let a Republican Senate of like somewhat reasonable people. I mean, because there are reasonable people in the Senate,
right.
and it's not going to be a huge thing. Like if they win back the Senate, it's going to be like a 51-49
right
situation.
It's going to be very they're not going to have a filibuster proof majority over
no
there.
And so like there's enough reasonable Republicans who are going to be left that they're not going to be able to pass like wing nutty enough things
no.
to send to the wing nut house for them to pass. So like you don't even really have to have to obstruct them.
Obstruction is really our only defense anyway. Like we're not passing anything useful
right.
overall. No one is signing useful bills into law. We still have a veto
right.
over crazy wingnut nonsense.
right.
So, like, we're not, like, without the power to...
Right.
But I think it would be hard to have a majority in the House and a majority in the Senate because it would really come down to Senate Democrats obstructing. You don't want to be the obstructionist. And I think especially Democrats don't want to be obstructionists because their voters really do care if they accomplish things. Republican voters like the obstruction thing. So, for them, this is really working.
Right, because Republicans are trying to not pass things.
Right,
like, that's their stated goal. Right.
Whereas Democratic voters want to see, and here's the other issue, Democrats are a bunch of compromising nonsense.
They'll vote on all the things
that they shouldn't be voting. They'll let things get to the floor at the Senate that should not be voted on by humans.
Right.
Like that is something they will do.
Yeah.
The same way that they will declare that we shouldn't be having presidential primaries
anymore.
Yeah,
they don't have
we should just declare Hillary Clinton queen.
They don't have the balls.
No.
Yeah.
They don't have the balls of
everyday people.
Everyday people. Yeah, they're some of the wimpiest people on the planet. And I think to some degree, some of their voters really like that because it means, you know, it makes us feel like they're less sort of like game playing.
Right, and that we're the party that actually can get things
done. We're the party that like tries and thinks about things. But it's not been an effective strategy, and it certainly would be a problem if it ended up aiding and abetting a bunch of criminals.
No, right.
I mean, let's start calling them criminals.
Yeah.
They are criminally insane.
I've got some thoughts on some Republican criminals.
Yeah.
We're going to get to
later. We're going to get to those in a little bit. But speaking of criminals first, we're living in a farce, really, everybody.
Yeah.
The Republicans, as we said, voted on Wednesday, instead of voting on roads bills and other important business, to sue Obama for failing to implement the Affordable Care Act on the timetable that was set out in the law. It was 225 to 201, and the 225 have all repeatedly voted to repeal Obamacare.
Right.
So it's curious that they're mad that it's not going in fast enough.
Five Republicans did vote against this.
It is insane, but I'm
surprised they could find five to vote against it. So
five.
Good on them, I guess. But
50% reasonable people in Congress who just on a human level are reasonable. They don't even have reasonable ideas. They're just like... They have a little common sense.
Right. They have enough common sense to understand the hypocrisy of this.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Basically, the resolution gives Boehner the authority to file a court case that would, quote, seek any appropriate relief from either the agencies that were responsible for this mandate going into effect or Obama's administration themselves. The administration is claiming that there is a Treasury Department rule called transition relief that they have authority under the Treasury Department, or the Transition Relief Authority, that allows them to grant relief in an emergency. And Bush has used this before.
I'm sure he has.
I mean, Bush has used
everything.
He used everything.
Yeah.
All the tools that he could possibly have used.
All the tools that Obama has used.
But it gives you the power to delay implementing laws that you think are going to negatively impact people.
Right.
Which is what they did here. They said people weren't ready for this mandate to go into effect, so they delayed it. And anyway, it's so nice to know that our taxpayer dollars allowed them to spend Wednesday voting on this fluff piece of a law.
And Thursday fighting about...
Immigration.
Whether an immigration bill was crazy enough for them to actually pass or not.
Yeah.
Bless their hearts.
They try.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't try, but they try.
No.
Meanwhile, in a move that is pissing me off...
I know.
Eric Cantor is resigning in mid-August, apparently. He's going
right.
he's going to leave, he's going to resign on August 18th so that his replacement, Brat, you know, what is his name, David Brat?
Yes, maybe. Who cares?
Can keep his seniority. He can go in on the lame duck session and then keep his seniority when he goes in next fall. So he's asked Terry McAuliffe, who's the governor of Virginia, to arrange a special election so that they can elect Brat before, you know, he leaves office in August, and then Brat can keep Cantor's seniority.
They should not, Terry McAuliffe should not allow this, that. Obviously.
No, that is not the rule.
No.
The rule is, if you get thrown out, you lose your seniority. That's how it works.
Yeah.
Like, sorry, guys.
Yeah.
You don't get to, like, if every seat, like, we could just do this with every seat, if that's how we wanted to play it.
I know, right?
It doesn't like, ever benefit a state to lose seniority. Even changing parties, it doesn't benefit a state to lose seniority. You don't, that is one of the things that kept Charlie Rangel in business for so long, was the man had more seniority than anyone else in the world.
Yeah.
And that was how he was the head of the Ways and Means Committee for so long. Like,
he's 1,000.
He's 1,000 years old. He's been there his whole life. Like,
yeah.
That's seniority is part of the game. It's part of the package.
Yeah.
It's part of the incumbent's campaigning strategy. You just sort of, you don't get to just hand it off to whoever you fucking feel like because you're an idiot who redistricted themselves
seniority
into a district too conservative for you.
That just sort of by definition you cannot hand to
someone. No, exactly. It's either yours or it's nobody's.
Right.
It doesn't get filtered by district.
Yeah.
There's because if we're going to go by district seniority, the 13 colonies should get more seniority than the rest of the states. And Alaska should get nothing. Right. Alaska and Hawaii can languish out there in their non-contiguous 50-state states. And the rest of us should get extra seniority for just being older states. Because we've certainly had people in Congress longer than they have.
We have.
I mean, if that's how it works.
Yeah.
I'm just saying. In any case.
That's not how it works, which is what makes this ridiculous.
Exactly. Well, at that press conference.
Yes, the Obama press conference on Friday. Sort of wording. He has to think about wording, because he's sort of, like, been getting critique about sort of, like, how glib this was, and I can't say that I disagree with the people who would say that. But Obama said, "We tortured some folks." Everybody in politics loves to talk about folks, because it's folksy, and people like folks. It's a very Midwestern-y thing to say, like, often.
Swing state voters love folks.
Love folks. But the terrorists that we were torturing, maybe not folks. Well, granted, we shouldn't have been torturing them, which was the sort of point of the line of questioning here, because there's a new CIA report, there's going to be a report coming out about how the CIA, that criticizes them because they were torturing people after 9/11.
This is also, I think, you know, we have in my office somebody who, when he will summarize a screenplay, will say, like, some cops and some robbers go into a bank. Like, he'll, like, somehow, by adding the word some, manage to make what is a high-paced thriller sound like a walk in the park.
Right.
I think my issue with this is not referring to terrorists as folks. It's that he made it sound so flippant, like,
exactly.
We tortured some guys. Like, that doesn't sound like someone who's sorry for torturing people.
No.
Nor does it sound like someone who knows that torturing is wrong.
Yeah.
Which he is both of those things, I think. But that, I think, is where this wording gets us into trouble.
Yeah. And this is sort of, like, the most kind of emphatic that he's been about this.
It's certainly the most direct he's been
because he sort of in 2009 gave a speech where he, you know, talked about, like, the ban of so-called enhanced interrogation techniques and brutal methods, but he's never really said the word torture in a way where he sort of, like, acknowledged that we were doing it. Now, most people are saying that he's not sort of going out on a limb here. What he's trying to do is sort of, like, beat everyone to the punch because of this report, which is everyone who knows anything about it is saying that it's going to be fairly damning as to how we sort of conducted ourselves post 9/11. So it's also going, this report is going to claim that torture didn't really get us anything.
No, surprisingly.
Yeah, nothing happened.
Torture is not that effective a way of getting shit.
Yeah, and it's also going to say that the CIA was lying to Congress about what it was up to in terms of torture. Like, they weren't telling anyone that they were doing it. Sneak mongers. Like that. Yeah.
This is nonsense.
But this was all happening. This report was announced that it's coming out here pretty soon, and that happened on the heels of us finding out that the CIA was spying on the Senate earlier in the week. So
people from
both sides have been calling for John Brennan to resign, and Obama was like, "Oh, I have you know, full support of John Brennan." But so
that
he's
means
probably
nothing.
Not. He's probably not.
He's a
going
war
anywhere,
criminal, also apparently.
Well, and that's the thing. And this is, I think, my big takeaway from this is.
Yeah.
I think that we have never really acknowledged, at least sort of like outwardly, that we were torturing these people. We debated a lot about whether waterboarding was torturing. Right. We debated, and, you know, he called them enhanced interrogation techniques.
Right.
But we've never really said, yes, we tortured these people. And torture is a felony under U.S. law.
There's a reason we've never said it. And it's because it would turn whatever agency and whatever, you know, individuals were responsible for that technique being used into war criminals.
Right.
That's why we've never said it.
And this is what progressives and
have been saying for years about the Bush administration,
because this was obviously done under them, because it happened after 9/11. At what point do these people have to be tried for the felony of torture?
No, exactly.
I mean, if they knew what was going on.
I would say at this point.
Right now.
I would have said 10 years ago at this point.
Now we know. We've got an official report. We've got the president acknowledging that that's what happened.
This is the moment.
Go. Lock them up.
They're trying to sue you.
Yeah.
Fuck it. Sue everyone else. No.
It's not going to happen.
No, of course it's not going to happen. And that's disappointing. I think it would be... I think it's going to be a good discussion for us to have right now. I think it's good coming up on the midterms to be talking about this, because it reminds everyone that Republicans are not, you know, they have gone to such great lengths to distance themselves from the Bush administration, and they are still the party of crazy.
Yeah.
And they're still the party of enhanced interrogation techniques and all of those things.
You can remind everyone of
that. Like, this is good timing, but it's also important to have this discussion.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's probably an important time to have this discussion, just because it seems like the whole world might be about on the brink of war. You know, like...
It's about time for us to have to start torturing people again. Right, like, if we choose.
Right, so it's time to talk about it.
We're not going to...
Yeah, exactly. It's time to talk about it. So, in any case, I think this is a good sort of, like, opening for us.
Yeah.
For progressives, at least.
Yeah,
we never get good openings.
No, we don't.
We don't use good openings. That's the problem. We get them, and then we just never use them effectively, because we like to argue amongst ourselves. And I'm a big proponent of arguing amongst ourselves. I'm not trying to say that I think we should all fall in lockstep. Right. I think that's not in the tradition of progressivism that I ascribe
to. It's the opposite.
Questioning everything is a smarter way to go about things than believing everything you hear.
Yeah.
Meanwhile.
Jobs numbers. Yeah. We should come up with like some goofy sound effect for jobs numbers too, like we do with Hillary Pillory, because like this is we do it every month, and it doesn't get less meaningless every month. We always, it's like the same thing. I mean, the numbers are different, but they're always
the same thing.
They mean the same,
and they're never right. So it doesn't matter what we say. So if we told you right now that the economy had added 7 million jobs,
We wouldn't know until next month whether that was accurate or not.
We would not know, and it wouldn't matter.
No.
Because it wouldn't in any way affect your day-to-day living. It's sort of, this is all sort of like, so that the Fed can decide on the interest rate, and like all of these things that real people aren't trying to care about. Anyway, we added 209,000 jobs, allegedly, if you're interested. That's I think the latest in a long string of months where we've added more than 200,000. So that's good news. Everyone felt sort of mediocre about this report, though. They were like, it wasn't as many jobs as they expected to add.
Well, and last month was almost 300,000.
Right. Last month was much higher, assuming last month's numbers were true. We still don't know that either.
Right.
But it is sort of the latest in a string of months that have been relatively impressive, and I think this is the strongest 6 months that we've had since 2006.
Yeah, so that's pretty huge.
Good sign.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's actually, this will be good because this sort of slow and steady improvement of the economy is peaking at a good time for the Democrats.
Yeah, I agree.
Because that is like, they inherited an economy that was just in total shambles and then got blamed for things not happening fast enough, as if people can wave wands and fix economies, and they have taken a very sort of like, slow and steady approach to implementing changes, and I think that this will peak at a good time.
Well, and they've sort of had to, because they can't pass a jobs bill.
Right, they can't pass a jobs bill, so it's all they've
slow
been able
and steady
to,
is the only
slow
way
and steady is
go.
It. They can just raise and lower interest rates, basically.
Right. So, but I do think that, you know, there were some sort of like heartening things in this. Yes, the numbers were not there, but the unemployment rate went from 6.1 to 6.2, which you might think is a bad thing, but the reason that it went up is because people are now back looking for work, so there's some confidence about the fact that people might find a job, because if we remember over the last couple of years, the unemployment rate kept going down and down and down, and it wasn't because we were adding jobs, it was because people were pulling out of the labor force.
Right, because it's not that 94% of Americans are employed and only 6% of Americans don't have jobs, it's that 6% of Americans are looking actively for work.
Right, and can't find it.
The rest of Americans may have just given
up. Either have a job or gave up.
Yeah. If we had zero employment right now, we would still potentially have a similar unemployment rate. It's just that the rest of us would stop looking because we'd be depressed.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So anyway, that's
good
the
news,
month's fake
or bad
jobs
news.
Numbers.
It's mediocre news.
Mediocre and meaningless.
Yep, that's right.
That's it.
It's fine.
Yeah.
Everything's fine. Meanwhile, speaking of weeks that we couldn't vote on infrastructure spending bills.
Yeah.
We had a sort of hilarious thing happen. It's not hilarious, but there was a big storm in Arizona that knocked down part of our super effective border fence that we've built down there.
Yes.
So basically, we can't even get our infrastructure spending on board for a border security wall, which is like all that Republicans will give money to in the first place.
I know.
Second of all, it proves that nature can destroy your plans to have a wall between two nations if it so chooses. And this is a wall, by the way, that apparently a lot of smugglers just knock down portions of regularly.
Right.
So, like, the wall is, like, not stopping anyone from crossing the border anyway. No. It's just, like, a ridiculous wall that now we have to pay to fix that is...
But, like, once a rainstorm can destroy that, like... That's not a sign. What is it? Is it, like, a sand wall or something? Wait, or what?
Was
like,
the wall built in a river? Like, what... where is this wall? Why is this the only effective strategy we have? So many questions. So many questions.
Yeah.
Just goes to show you that, A, if you're going to build a wall, you need to really think about your infrastructure spending plans a little bit more specifically. And, B, you shouldn't build a wall between two countries. It's a stupid plan.
It's ridiculous.
It never works the way you want it to.
No.
If you build a wall all the way around a country, you've created a hazard like we've seen in the Middle East.
I know, exactly.
If you build a wall on one end of a country, you see people just go around the wall or go over the wall. Like, there's not...
Yeah.
Walls are never a real life plan. They're a plan in like myths from yore. Myths of yore.
Yeah.
Succeed in like people have successful walls.
I know, right? Like walls.
Back when
like,
people were just shooting cannons at them.
Maybe we could just create a moat on the Mexican border.
Exactly.
You know? I mean,
maybe
like
they won't cross
situation.
A river like,
and have it guarded with dragons. It's just not like a
it's
thing.
It's not a real thing.
No.
These are geopolitical issues that cannot be solved by just like putting little blocks up in people's way.
Yeah.
Like, oh, we've locked this door, so you'll never get out of this enormous hallway filled with doors. Like it's just a terrible idea.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, more infrastructure issues. No one in Ohio can drink water because they're all going to die of liver failure. There's a water treatment plant in Toledo that tested positive for microcystin, which is a toxin.
Yeah. It's algae bloom.
It's related to algae in Lake Erie. Yeah.
Which is supposedly due to, like, farm runoff.
Yeah.
That's not good.
That's not good. It's not what you want. It also means that the problem isn't necessarily going to go away this time.
No.
So, John Kasich declared a state of emergency in 3 counties in Ohio and told everyone they couldn't drink the water. And they couldn't even boil it. Like, you can't boil out microcystin, apparently.
Really?
So,
bad.
Everyone just went crazy buying water
do. Costco was apparently, like, a giant disaster zone.
Shit show.
It's like end-of-the-world style stock up on water.
Exactly. That's what happens. Well, this is also, like, I feel like... In Ohio and, like, places like Ohio are kind of, like, land of excess anyway. Like, people like bulk shopping in those areas because they have a lot of storage space.
They
so,
do.
Like, I can only imagine that everyone was like, oh, my God, we might be without water for 3 days. Let's buy a lifetime supply of water.
A lot of people in certain parts of Ohio were probably already prepared for this.
It's so true.
Right?
Yeah. But this is the thing. Those people still went to the supermarket and bought more water.
Yeah, exactly.
They weren't going to let the stockpile that they had in their full garage full of water bottles stop them from getting more water.
Yeah.
In this situation. Because
you
never know.
Yeah.
You never know.
God.
Probably. But in any case, today is still in effect. We're 24 hours after the original Do Not Drink order. No one knows what's going to happen. They're testing the water now and probably going to find that it's poisonous. And
then tell people they can drink it.
Exactly. Yeah. A famous move.
Classic.
This is why I feel like New York City is really winning America.
Mm.
That's just the best... tap water of any place on earth.
Oh, is it? I think our tap water is pretty good.
It's not as good as New York's. New York has notoriously delicious tap water.
It's certainly drinkable, though.
It's drinkable. That's nice.
I mean, so many places don't have drinkable tap water.
It's so funny to think about, because I've never really lived anywhere that doesn't have drinkable tap water.
I haven't either. We always drink the tap water.
Yeah. And especially in New York, it's like, New York is like, that's like a thing that everyone knows is a thing.
Right.
Tap water is really good. It's clean. It comes from upstate New York. We have a brilliant aqueduct system that was built in the days of yore as well that brings it to us. And, you know, you get natural water pressure up to 6 stories in New York.
Wow.
Because of the aqueduct.
Nice.
It's a smart plan. They engineered it smartly.
Nice.
New Yorkers are geniuses. They can't help themselves. But it's weird to think that in a lot of America, because it's like something you associate with like going to Mexico. It's like not being able to drink the water.
Don't drink the water.
Like,
yeah.
You can't drink the water
dysentery.
At like in the town upstate that my grandparents lived in.
Yeah, it's so
it
weird.
It tasted like chlorine, and then everyone out of town has their own wells, and that just tastes like sulfur.
Well, and there's fracking upstate New York,
right?
So like you're dying.
You potentially might die because
it
might be flammable.
You can light it on fire, right?
You might be drinking gasoline for all you know, but It's just a lot of... It's weird to think that people are living in places
where... you can't drink water out of a faucet.
Yeah.
It's bizarre.
It's weird. Meanwhile...
This is an odd story. I mean, it's sad, certainly, because people are dying. But there's a heat wave going on in Japan. It's a suspect heat wave. And I don't want to...
We're saying this is people that are right now too hot.
Right. We're in a similar heat wave as Japan right now, and I don't think
nice
that everyone is dying.
We had a nice cooling rainstorm yesterday where it was 90 degrees while it was raining.
Yeah, exactly. So that's about how hot it is in Japan, and basically the entire country is checking themselves into hospitals. Yeah.
We have a couple theories about this. One is that maybe hospitals are the most air-conditioned places in Japan, and everyone is checking themselves in for comfort reasons.
Right.
The second might be that perhaps they don't have... Like, here, you would only go to the hospital if you were literally about to die, because otherwise you'd fear medical bills that would destroy your life.
Right.
In Japan, maybe they can comfortably go to a hospital when they're feeling a little under the weather.
Just have, like, a nice sleepover.
Yeah.
Get a good night's rest. Like,
exactly.
And some air conditioning.
That's how hospitals should be. You should be able to go. You're like, oh, I'm not feeling great. It's very hot. I don't see this going away.
Right.
Why don't I go to my local hospital and see if they can help me with fluids and such?
Because the highest temperature that they've had is 102 degrees.
Right.
The day that it was the worst, where the most people checked themselves into hospitals and they had the most deaths,
it was 95 degrees. Now, is it really humid there?
Well, it is because they're also having like a lot of rainstorms. Like, I mean, I'm sure it's oppressive. Like, I'm not trying to like downplay that, but I mean, like, you know, you think about like places in Australia that get to like 120 degrees, and like everybody just sort of like carries on with their day.
Right, moving on.
I think that they're just
We were in Palm Springs the other weekend, and it was like 1 trillion degrees, and we were playing tennis
pickleball.
Outside. Yeah, but that. I think what we've learned in L.A. today, because it rained yesterday and it's very humid today, is that humidity, now that I remember what it's like, is shitty.
I know. It's like being back in the Midwest.
Yeah,
it's like that was the thing that made summers there so terrible.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not trying to... I didn't sign on for this.
No. No, I'm not living...
We had like a 72% humidity day earlier in the week.
Yeah. That's not...
Too high.
We can't have that here.
That's too high.
It's too hot
for desert.
That. It's a desert. Yeah, we're in a desert in a drought.
I mean...
Come on. Ridiculous.
I think the real problem is that like 25% of the Japanese population is over the age of 65.
It's a very old population.
Like half of the people who have checked into the hospital have been over the age of 65. So,
and that is a common thing that happens in other, you know, when it gets really hot in New York, a lot of old people end up in the hospital.
Yeah.
And they probably have to be fearful that if they go to the hospital, they'll be bankrupt. And so that's already a step. And B, there's not as many old people there. 25% of the population of New York City is not over 65.
Yeah.
So. That's probably what that's about. But I do feel like every year I hear about a heat wave in Japan. That
well, yeah, the same thing like, around the same time this time last year.
Might this just be the weather?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I think that there's...
It gets hot there?
You know, this is... Well, exactly. I mean, this is a thing that's, you know, liberals have been saying. Like, you know, people are...
The weather is different now.
In the discussion of climate change... You know, people were still sort of, like, having this ridiculous debate as to whether humans have caused it or, like, who has, like, what the cause of it is, when we should stop concerning ourselves what the cause of it is and just acknowledge the fact that we're in it right now.
But, and it doesn't more focused on
solutions
than deciding what caused it.
Who cares whether it's us that are doing it or whether it's just sort of, like, a natural occurrence in the earth? Like, if there's something that we can do to sort of eliminate ourselves of it, then, like, let's figure it out.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yeah, we're at the solution phase now. We've passed the discussion phase about whether or not it's a thing.
The Japanese are a people that I trust to maybe get on that.
Yeah.
Like, they're not, you know, I mean, they're sort of like, I don't think that they're going to just stand for all of their citizens dying and going to the hospital just because it's hot outside.
Exactly. Well, and it's hard in Japan probably because there's like 1 trillion people living on top of each other. It's like the densest country on earth or something like that.
Yeah.
So it's probably quite oppressive because everyone's just in your business all the time.
I know. Yeah.
People are living in actual capsules there. Like, that's a thing that's going on in Japan. So.
Yeah. It's not great.
Meanwhile, back in L.A.
Sports news.
Blah.
Sort of.
A probate court ruled on Monday that Don Sterling cannot stop his wife, Shelley, or his estranged wife, Shelley, from selling the Clippers, which she was going to do.
There was an offer from ex-Microsoft CEO Steve Ballmer for $2 billion, which is actually more than what everybody sort of like would think that it was actually worth. And initially, it seemed like that might go through, but then Donald Sterling decided to just sort of like cause a huge ruckus about it, which is sort of
because he doesn't want to sell the team.
He doesn't want to sell the team, right? So, but apparently his wife, Shelley, apparently like properly removed him from being the co-trustee of the Sterling Family Trust, so he can't stop her from selling it. So we're going to have a new Clippers owner, and Don Sterling can just potentially go away, which would be great, because nobody needs to deal with him.
He'll still be a landlord in Los Angeles who's causing trouble for tenants near and far.
He can do that.
Throw himself into that.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Meanwhile, I think it's also good news because the coach is apparently well-liked. And
the coach is well-liked. The Clippers had been sort of, like, notoriously, like, the worst team in the NBA. And then really just, like, within the last 5 or 6 years, they've gotten better. And they actually, Doc Rivers is, like, a newer coach and got him, like, in fairly deep into the playoffs this year. They've got some good players. And he was talking about, he's African-American. And he sort of had talked openly about, like, potentially not coming back if, like, Donald Sterling was going to be, you know, the one that he was going to have to be dealing with. And you can't sort of
blame him.
Although there has been a lot of chatter about the disingenuousness of that, because most everyone knew that Donald Sterling was a terrible racist. He'd actually been sued by a previous player. The case got thrown out for whatever reason. But, I mean,
this might have been a bargain.
Doc Rivers, on some level, knew what he was getting into. He might not have known the extent of what he was getting into.
Well, and he might not have realized it would blow up so that everyone would then know he was a guy who was okay with it. You know, that he was a guy who had done this.
Right.
Like, that, I feel like, might have
changed. So, anyway, I think everybody can sort of, like, now rest assured that Doc Rivers will stay and stop talking about it. Hopefully, this will be the last time we tell you about Donald Sterling.
Jesus Christ.
Who gives a rip about
him? Boring.
He's awful.
He's awful. He's a gross old guy.
Screw him.
Horrible.
Yeah.
The best story of the week, the one that I'm most excited about, is a story that Bren found on Mashable. So I did a semester of college in Vietnam, and in Vietnam, they don't have the cookie thing down that well, but there is this one kind of cookie that's available everywhere in Asia that's super popular called choco pies. And I'm sure if you've been to Asia, you've had a choco pie. There's a South Korean cookie that is like a cookie with like a disgusting artificial tasting marshmallow dipped in really gross artificial chocolate.
And there's like a cookie part of it too.
Yeah, it's like
there?
There's two cookies,
almost like an Oreo.
It's
but
like
it's
a
not
Malamar with a top.
Got it.
Okay. With a top cookie.
Right. I saw pictures of it. I've never had one.
Yeah.
But
it's not good. They don't taste good.
Right.
They taste a little bit like styrofoam air.
Yeah, chemicals.
Chemical
too,
styrofoam.
Right. Certainly doesn't taste like chocolate.
It doesn't taste like chocolate, marshmallow, or cookie. So it fails on all of those counts. But it's a very popular snack there. And in Vietnam, they had like a bunch of bootleg versions, as they do of everything there. So they also sold Choco Bais, Choco Rosas. There were a lot of exciting Choco Pie. And we would often buy different kinds of Choco Pie knockoffs and taste test them.
Yeah. Well, that's what. Yeah. What else would you do?
Just not, I think Choco Bais actually were a little better than Choco Pie.
Interesting.
Choco Rosas, not the same at all.
Oh,
they were the same idea.
Oh,
no, they were the same idea. They just somehow hadn't replicated it in any way. So it was just like a weird tasting cookie with different marshmallow and like gross it was horrible. They were kind of crunchy. Like, I'm not trying to eat a crunchy Choco Pie. I'm not an insane person. In any case, the other people that really like Choco Pies, along with everyone in Asia, is North Koreans. Because everyone loves Choco Pies.
Yeah.
The whole place is wild for them. You can buy them in the supermarket here a lot of the time.
Oh, interesting.
Asian people near and far are loving Choco Pies.
And they're made in South Korea.
They're made in South Korea. They are a South Korean snack food.
Yeah.
And so apparently, Choco Pies were quite popular in North Korea.
Yeah.
And so Kim Jong-un decided to ban them because using suspect reasoning. This is not the reasoning, by the way, that you use as a dictator trying to maintain control. He was worried that they would encourage an uprising.
Right.
Because they're pro-capitalist cookies.
Right, sign of capitalism.
Yeah. His pro-capitalist cookies can really... I don't think he realized that what would really cause an uprising was taking
people's
Choco Pies
away.
Right. People like Choco Pies. Just give them fucking Choco Pies. That's a really easy way to keep everyone,
Tell everyone that you made the Choco Pies.
Yeah. Well, Vietnam is making knockoff Choco Pies. Why can't North Korea just go into business with their own Choco Pies?
They
don't have to taste delicious.
Right.
That's, if there's anything we've proven, it's that people are selling Choco Pies that don't taste delicious in other countries. It's not a problem. They're not delicious in the first place, so why would you care? I just, like, if you are worried that Choco Pies are communist cookies, I mean, are capitalist cookies, make communist Choco Pies somehow.
Yeah, exactly.
Figure it out.
Yeah.
In any case, don't take people's Choco Pies away. That's what he did. And so, in a sort of, I think, tongue-in-cheek move by a bunch of North Korean dissidents that are in South Korea and some South Koreans themselves, they are now sending balloons filled with Choco Pies over the border to North Korea.
They're these ridiculous, giant balloons.
Yeah.
They're crazy because I'm assuming they have to be that big to sort of, like, lift things and then go wherever they're going. But, like, it's a sort of crazy sight. Like, the picture, we should post it. Because, they're like these, they're huge. They're, like, probably, like, I mean, 100 feet tall.
Yeah.
I mean, they're like these massive,
these enormous,
like, really
balloons.
Tall.
And they have used them before to send leaflets and USB sticks.
Right, of photos of the outside
world. Photos of other
world.
Places, yeah.
Right.
over the border, but apparently now they feel like their best PR effort can be made in the form of choco pies, which they're probably right about.
Right.
People love if capitalism is what's giving people choco pies, I bet North Koreans will have an easier time grasping right. why that could be beneficial to them than just, you know, USB sticks of pictures of the Alps. Like, would that help anyone?
The North Korean leadership has threatened to shell the people who are responsible for that. Like, they're going to kill people for sending choco pies
over the border. That's the exact reaction they were hoping.
They're nothing if not hilarious.
Hilarious over there. Yeah. They're their own. They're a farce as well.
They are.
We're a farce. They're more of a farce.
Right.
Their joke is a little too obvious.
Uh-huh. Like, also a farce.
Oh my god. Already?
Final news.
Surprising.
We talked about this last week about the Sarah Palin channel, the internet channel. We've already got an update because it's already gone haywire.
Apparently, she's doing these interviews with, quote, real Americans, where she just travels the country talking to the least suitable people to represent America.
Apparently, real Americans are racist white people.
Racist white people. That's who her real Americans are.
Yeah.
So, she's already catching flack because she's already aired an interview in which the guy that she was interviewing repeatedly refers to Obama as an N-word Hitler.
Yeah.
So he's just throwing everything. And like, he uses the N-word constantly. Right, he uses the N-word repeatedly, and then he adds Hitler periodically when he can.
And also wished that he was either dead or in jail. He said, not a day goes past where I don't wish that he's dead or in jail.
Like, just some delightful sentiments from some good old-fashioned Americans.
Real Americans.
That's it. That's who they are. So that's already gone a predictable route.
Right.
And Sarah Palin herself apparently did not seem that uncomfortable with the repeated use of the N-word and N-word Hitler.
Well,
this is a word that we can't say.
It's real Americans.
Like, this is a word that most Americans won't even say.
Who is she to fight with real Americans?
No, so true.
If that's this guy's opinion, then I mean, he needs a forum.
That's right. He needs a forum.
And it's the Sarah Palin channel.
It's the Sarah Palin channel.
Oh, God.
Where only the most suitable real Americans are called upon to represent their nation. This is the country that we live in.
Yep, exactly.
It's delightful. Well,
this seems destined to fail.
Oh, but apparently Michelle Bachmann is also looking into forming her own channel.
Bless her heart. She's retiring.
Yeah.
So thank God she's still going to be in the news.
No, it would be a shame if she left.
I know.
Without saying goodbye.
She also, I don't think we talked about this in the podcast, but she said she was angry that people hadn't asked whether she was going to run for president in 2016. Did you see that?
I think we did mention that.
Did we talk about that?
Maybe.
I can't even remember.
I remember that being in the news.
She was like real miffed.
She was like a little annoyed that people weren't asking her.
I know.
Like, we should all be knocking down her door.
I know.
Trying to get her to run for president. Like, sorry, Michelle, you were just not that great of a candidate.
No. For the candidate for people who wanted a bad candidate.
Yeah. But there are those people.
Yeah.
If Sarah Palin has shown us anything.
A lot of the Republican candidates in 2012
were candidates. Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. In any case, that's the news this week.
Yeah. Back to our regular days, too. You'll be able to listen to this on Monday morning.
Like you've always dreamed of. Yes. tell your friends and such. And we will see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.